Okay, so I'd like to welcome everybody to our two-day workshop. We're going to be focusing on the theme of the four immeasurables. That's immeasurable love, compassion, joy, and equanimity. And there you have a sheet with both the long version and the short version of the four immeasurables on it. So I'll be using that as a reference, and then we'll also recite them together. These are four thoughts that, thoughts, feelings, whatever you want to call them, emotions, that we train our mind in. And they are found in all the Buddhist traditions, in Theravada and in Mahayana. So they're very important for all the Buddhists. And they're really quite wonderful. I gave a talk last night at NTU, and one of the students asked the question, how can I be happy? And I said, generate a kind heart. So these four thoughts are the essence of a kind heart. So they're very important for our own happiness, as well as for the happiness of society and the happiness of our families, the happiness of all beings. Okay? You'll notice that we have two versions of the four immeasurables here, the short version and the long version. Okay? The order is slightly different in them. Okay? Let's read them out loud, both of them, okay? And as we're reading them out loud, let's think about them and see if you can notice a little bit the difference in the order. May all sentient beings have happiness and its causes. May all sentient beings be free of suffering and its causes. May all sentient beings not be separated from selflessness. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free of bias, attachment, and anger. How wonderful it would be if all sentient beings were to abide in equanimity, free of bias, attachment, and anger. May they abide in this way. I shall cause them to abide in this way. Guru Deity, please inspire me to be able to do so. How wonderful it would be if all sentient beings had happiness and its causes. May they have these. I shall cause them to have these. Guru Deity, please inspire me to be able to do so. How wonderful it would be if all sentient beings were free from suffering and its causes. May they be free. I shall cause them to be free. Guru Deity, please inspire me to be able to do so. How wonderful it would be if all sentient beings were never parted from upper rebirth and liberation's excellent bliss. May they never be parted. I shall cause them never to be parted. Guru Deity, please inspire me to be able to do so. The purpose of reciting this, and I would suggest that you recite these every day. No. The purpose of reciting prayers, any kind of recitation, is to transform our mind into what we're reciting. It's not just for the sake of reciting the words, it's for making a mental shift. Okay? Now, can you see a little bit that there's something, that there's a difference in order? Yeah, what do you notice?
Equanimity.
Yeah, but what about equanimity? In the short version, equanimity comes at the end. And in the long version, equanimity comes at the beginning. I don't know why it's like that. So don't ask me. I think in terms of our practice, it's helpful to think of equanimity at the very beginning. Okay? And we can see, if we look at the long version, that we have kind of definitions of each of the four. And by the way, the four are equanimity, love, compassion, and joy. Okay? So, definition of equanimity is abiding, free of bias, attachment, and anger. Okay? Like it says in the first verse. Okay? The second one is love, and the definition there is wishing sentient beings to have happiness and its causes. The third one is compassion, and the definition is wishing sentient beings to be free of suffering and its causes. And then the fourth one is joy, and the definition is wishing that sentient beings were never parted from upper rebirth and liberation's excellent bliss. Okay? So it's very helpful to remember these definitions, because then if somebody asks you, you know, what love means in Buddhism, you know very quickly, what does love mean? Wishing sentient beings to have happiness and its causes. Okay? So it's very helpful to remember these. They build on each other, and they are also very interrelated. They are called immeasurables for a few reasons. One reason is that we generate them towards immeasurable number of sentient beings. A sentient being is any living being with consciousness except a fully enlightened Buddha. Buddhas have consciousness, but their consciousnesses are not limited, so they're not called sentient beings. But sentient beings include human beings, animals, you know, the six realms of existence. Yeah. Insects, hell beings, gods, yeah, all the different ones. So these sentient beings are innumerable or immeasurable in number, so that's one reason why it's called immeasurable. A second reason is that we're generating each of these four thoughts, yeah, love, compassion, joy, and equanimity. Equanimity, love, compassion, and joy. We're generating them immeasurably. In other words, to a greatest extent, limitlessly. There's not going to be an end to the amount that we have them. And I think that's a very nice way to think, because sometimes, for example, we feel that our love is, we only have a fixed amount of love, and if we give it to one person, we can't give it to somebody else. That's a very limited way of thinking. You know, if we think about immeasurable love, you know, it never runs out. It's not of a limited quantity. And so it can go forever, and it can go to all beings without limit. Okay, so that's why it's called immeasurable. And there's a very important word in these four immeasurables. Okay? You find it in each of the four, and that word is all. Okay? May all sentient beings have happiness and its causes. It doesn't say, may my friends and relatives have happiness and its causes, and may my enemies suffer. Okay? It doesn't say that. It says all sentient beings. So all sentient beings includes the people we don't like. Yeah. It includes the people who cut you off on the highway. It includes the people who talk behind your back at work. It includes the terrorists. It includes your neighbor who plays their TV too loud. You know? It includes, you know, your best friend who betrayed your trust. It includes everybody. Yeah, we can't leave anybody out. All means all. It doesn't mean everybody minus the people we can't stand. Yeah. So there's something very potent in this, something that stretches our mind, stretches our ability. And all also includes ourselves. So when we're generating love and compassion and joy and equanimity, when we're generating these four, we're also extending them to ourselves. It's not that, you know, may everybody else have happiness and its causes because they deserve happiness, but I'm a creep and I don't deserve anything good. Uh-uh. We have to love ourselves and wish ourselves love. And it's not that we wish everybody else to be free of suffering, but we have such low self-esteem and that we think we're awful people and deserve to suffer ourselves. It's not that. Okay? We are a sentient being, no more, but also no less. So when it says all, it also includes ourselves. Okay? And that's important because we have to have a feeling of affection for ourselves and to wish ourselves well. This doesn't mean being arrogant and self-centered. Okay? But it does mean respecting ourselves in a healthy way and, you know, wishing ourselves well. It also means in forgiving ourselves when we make a mistake. Just as with these four, we're going to be, you know, we have to work on our mind to forgive those who have harmed us. We have to also be willing to extend forgiveness to ourselves because we've all made mistakes, haven't we? And I say this because we may try and practice the Dharma, the Buddha's teachings, and sometimes our psychological issues can really make big problems for us in doing so, especially if, you know, our self-esteem isn't so good, or if we're arrogant and proud. Okay, both of those can make big obstacles. So we have to have a realistic way of viewing ourselves in the process of all this. And we are a sentient being, you know, who's worthy of respect and love and compassion. But unfortunately, contrary to what we think, we're not the center of the universe. Okay? So we have to let go of that feeling that all my needs should be met and everything should go the way I want it to go. We also, at some point, have to let go of holding on to our problems and making a big deal out of our problems, you know, so that they're the center stage of everything in our life. Because, you know, so much self-centeredness like this can really, it makes our spiritual practice very difficult. It doesn't mean suppressing our problems, because suppression doesn't cure them. We have to recognize our problems and deal with them, but also go beyond them. Okay. For example, is there anybody here who's never had their feelings hurt by a friend, by somebody they've trusted? Somebody who's never had their feelings hurt by somebody they trusted. Anybody here? Now, yet, when that happens in our life, when our feelings are hurt, we feel like, oh, nobody's ever felt this bad before. Nobody's ever been mistreated by a dear one like I've been mistreated. Nobody else has ever had their trust betrayed like I've had my trust betrayed. Don't we? You know, when we have a problem, we really feel it. You know, nobody else has ever had it. Oh, how can they understand how much pain and misery I'm going through? You know, this is just too terrible. And yet, look, you know, everybody here has experienced that. Unless you haven't, but you were too shy to raise your hand. But I suspect it was more that, you know, we've all had that experience of having our feelings hurt, haven't we? Yeah? So somehow, you know, when we're in the middle of that, of having our feelings hurt, if we realize, hey, this is a universal experience, everybody's had this. It's not like, you know, I'm the only one who's ever suffered in this way. So rather than just, you know, spinning around my own problem and sinking into being so depressed about what's happening to me, you know, we remember, okay, this is painful, but everybody's had it. So I don't need to make such a big deal about it. I once had the experience, my problem, and I have the microphone singing. But a situation happened where I was working together with a group of people on a project, and they betrayed my trust and, you know, did all this stuff behind my back. You think everybody's nice to nuns, let me tell you. And, you know, these people were really, you know, what they did was not very nice. And it just, it disturbed me so much. It made my mind really unhappy. And I was ruminating about it. Oh, how could they have done this? And, you know, there were people I trusted and I thought they had good values. And look how they did this behind my back. And on and on. You know, and I was really getting into it, you know, ruminating for a long time. And this was going on for several weeks, you know, it wasn't just a small problem for a day, it was like going on for weeks or a couple of months. And at one point I was going to Dharamsala, India to listen to His Holiness the Dalai Lama's teachings, and the whole flight, you know, I'm thinking about this, and whole time there, this is going around, and And then one day after the teachings, I was walking back to the room where I was staying, and I kind of, something stopped me, and I said, you know, there's all these thousands of people at this teaching, but this problem is only a problem for me. None of the other people even know it exists. And it was like, well, then, if it's only a problem for one person, why am I making such a big deal out of it? Yeah? Do you see what I mean? I mean, I'm only one person. Nobody else cares about what these people did. I mean, they don't care. They don't know. And even if I told them, they'd say, ugh, how boring. Because it's true, isn't it? Other people's problems are so boring. I mean, I could go on with the whole saga. They did this, and then there was that phone call, and then this fax, and then this and this. I mean, I could tell the whole thing, and everybody would just go, oh, you know. Because listening to other people's melodramas, you know, very boring. And so, well, I was able to put it in that perspective. That, you know, hey, my problem is, it's just one person's problem, it's no big deal. You know, in the scope of what's happening on the planet today, you know, my problem doesn't really matter. Okay, these people were nasty, but let it go. Yeah, because by holding on to it, I'm the one who's suffering so much. Yeah, they aren't suffering, I'm suffering. Okay. So at that point, I was really able to let it go. Okay? So, you know, in this thing of all sentient beings, we are one, yeah, but, you know, in the scope of our problems, it's just one person's problems, and here we're trying to focus on all sentient beings. So to put our problems into perspective, yeah? Be able to let them go, not hold on to them so much. Make some sense? Huh? I mean, it's strange because part of our mind We somehow expect that everything in our life is supposed to come perfect, don't we? Now, that our life is supposed to be wonderful. We're supposed to get everything we want. Everything's supposed to be wonderful for us. And other people, okay, if they have some problems. But me, you know, I'm not supposed to have problems. Everything's supposed to go well for me. Who said that? Yeah? I mean, we live in what's called cyclic existence, the cycle of uncontrolled death and rebirth that's under the influence of our ignorance. And until we're liberated, until we've realized the nature of reality and attain liberation or enlightenment, we're going to be in this cycle of constantly recurring problems. So what are we so surprised about when problems happen? And yet we are constantly surprised when problems happen to me, aren't we? Problems happen to other people, who cares? Problems happen to me, big deal. But why are we so surprised? I have one friend who's a Buddhist teacher. He and I are quite good friends, and we, you know, we share our problems together. And, you know, I went through a difficult time not too long ago, and I'm telling him all my problems, and he said, "What did you expect? This is cyclic existence." You know, and I said, "You know, he's right. What did I expect? I expected everything to be, you know, perfect. That was kind of dumb." Yeah? Yeah, problems happen. So it's helpful to remember that. Yeah. I had another situation one time where I was in a teaching with a group of people, and during a break time, I was talking to somebody else, and another person overheard the conversation and kind of butt in and made a sharp remark, which, you know, was kind of none of that person's business. You know how you're talking to two people and somebody else hears it and says, "Why are you thinking like that? Why are you saying that? You're not even, you know, that person's not even in the conversation." So I was like, I was during a break during teaching, so I didn't say anything because I was in front of my teacher, so I don't want to, you know, look like a jerk. But inside, I was going, "Who do you think you are, you know, interrupting in my conversation and saying that kind of stuff to me?" You know, and so then after the teaching, I was going back to my room, and I was like, "Who does she think she is?" You know, I'm getting really worked up, getting quite angry at this person. And then all of a sudden, I stopped and I said, "Where am I going to go in this world where nobody's going to criticize me? Yeah? Where am I going to go in this world where nobody's going to make me angry? Yeah, can you think of some place where you can go where you're never going to get criticized?" Yeah, there is no place, is there? Even you go to a country and they outlaw criticism. Do you think people are going to keep that law? Forget it. They're still going to criticize, aren't they? This is what happens. So it kind of suddenly helped me when I said, "Oh, you know, yeah, it's true. Where am I going to go where nobody's going to criticize me? It's not the first time somebody's criticized me. It's not going to be the last time somebody criticizes me. I have to get used to being criticized." You know, doesn't mean that I'm a bad person when I get criticized. It also doesn't mean the other person's a jerk when they criticize me. You know, I have to let go of both of those preconceptions. But, you know, criticism happens. It's there. There's no place I can go to avoid it. So, might as well, you know, make my mind strong, make my mind firm, and get used to it. Make some sense? Yeah? So getting criticized is not the end of the world. Also, is there somebody here who's never criticized somebody else? Yeah, I mean, we certainly dished out our share of criticisms, haven't we? So why are we so surprised when somebody criticizes us? I mean, we've certainly done it enough to other people. But our mind says, but my criticism is true, and their criticism is false. Are we so sure? Is that always correct?